You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
Welcome to Sustainable Futures. On today's episode, we're going to have Kelly Manier, a local Cub Scout leader and pastor here at Simon Fraser University, about scouting and faith.
You know, for many, many thousands of years, different faith communities have cared about the order of God. Mm-hmm. In the Christian worldview, Genesis starts out with God creating man and then saying to man, you take care of the planet. You know, so I like mm-hmm. to think that for many, many thousands of years now, Christians have been held responsible for taking care of the planet.
Then we're going to have a poetic reading from a spec event that was held on Earth Day. They called it Mother Earth Day event on April 22nd.
The children in their villages sought to perfect the note that they loved the most. The children of America struck the note of the oneness with nature. They saw in each person the spirit of the soaring eagle and the soft cloud and the fearless wolf and the gentle lamb.
And we'll end the show with a little announcement of a toast for peace. There is going to be a toast for peace next Monday. And Jeff Boggensberger will be interviewed about that.
The idea was to create this a toast for peace to see if I couldn't get a number of people, and so far it's been quite successful, to just do one simple act that states that we're all unified with this idea that the world can be better and we start adhering to just better principles.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Sustainable Futures. I'm your host, Ryan Fletcher. Today has three segments. The first is with Kelly Manier, who is a local minister here at Simon Fraser University that I met at a community event up on Simon Fraser here, which are few and far between, and it was nice to see it happening. And I talked to him a little bit about the local community here and his scouting group and how it all connects to sustainability. And then there's a segment of a meeting by SPEC, which is the local environmental group. It was an Earth Day meeting on April 22nd, Earth Day. And I just took an excerpt, which is a reading of a poem that I felt inspired by and will try to inspire you with as well. The last segment of the show will be an interview with Jeff Boggensberger. We had a short little interview about his event on Monday. He's got an event on Monday called Toast for World Peace. So you'll learn about that as we end off the show. But let's begin the show before we talk about ending it. First, we have an interview with Kelly Manier. Welcome to Sustainable Futures. This is Ryan Fletcher interviewing Kelly Manier and his son,
Matthew.
So we're going to be talking about quite a few things. We'll talk about scouting, and we'll also talk a little bit about spiritual exploration on the subject of sustainability, because here we are on Sustainable Futures. That's what we like to talk about. First of all, what do you think is the connection between scout groups and sustainability?
Sure. Well, first, thanks, Ryan, for inviting me. I'm glad to be a part of your program. Our scouts groups have always been, since their inception over 100 years ago, into being outside, enjoying the great outdoors. So there's a kind of natural connection, I think, with scouting and sustainability.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things do you do?
Well, we do all kinds of things. First of all, I should let you know that our particular scouts group is the SFU Scouts. Our technical name is 21st Burnaby Highlanders. I started our group about 3 years ago here on the mountain at SFU. So, it's good. We got about 30 kids, beavers, cubs, scouts. We anticipate continued growth, especially as the new university community continues to grow. And the number one people group in the community is presently preschoolers and their families. And so as those kids get to be 5, 6, 7,
right,
our scouts group will probably quadruple.
Yeah.
So it's a good group. And that's why I brought my son today, because he could probably answer questions better than I.
So what are some things that you've done recently?
Well, son, what are some things we've done recently?
We do cub car racing. We're going to be going canoeing.
Canoeing.
We camp, and we snowshoeing. Most recently, we took a trip to Mount Seymour. We took 25 kids and leaders snowshoeing into the country and staying at a rustic cabin. And so it's camping, it's outdoors, and it's education. You know, we try to teach the kids great values.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I would think, as you're speaking of values, there is something that's not discussed so often in the mainstream about sustainability, and that is actually interaction with people. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Is there a connection there, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, is there a connection between sustainability and values, if that's what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way I've come across this is that I started our scouts group with a purpose, and the purpose was, for me, pretty clear. I mean, this community that we live in, the university,
mm-hmm,
what was a brand new community with zero infrastructure in terms of community events and so forth and so
mm-hmm
on. I mean, they had some great values like sustainability to kind of underpin what it's about. But basically, we needed something in the community that would bring people together, you know. And I thought, you know, my son loves camping, the outdoors. Let's start a scouts group for him
mm-hmm
and his friends, and make that kind of like a platform that we could help build community within our community. That was kind of a motivation behind starting our particular scouts group. And, you know, I mean, it fits really well with the notion of sustainability and, you know, the values that we have in scouting. Just really do well with that, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those values?
Things like doing a good turn for someone every day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Caring for your community. Demonstrating that, you know, you care. I was thinking about this on the way over. If we really want people in this community to do things like we did this recently, you know, a pitch-in day where we picked up garbage in the community. That's great for sustainability, but, you know, once a year is not adequate. I mean,
mm-hmm,
what's more important to me is building a sense of pride in your community, caring about the environment, caring about your, you know, your neighbors, caring about, you know, how clean and healthy our community is. And so those are the things that drive me. I mean, how we can bring people together
mm-hmm
to focus on really helping each other out and helping our environment out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the key to sustainability. We can talk a lot about, you know, individual initiatives, but when we work together collectively as a community, I think we're
right
better served.
So. Yeah, local community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, when I saw you a couple of days ago and we arranged this, I was quite impressed to see the numbers out there
mm-hmm
and to see that this is people from the community, because I've been up here at SFU for about 4 years now and have not seen much community yet.
Mm-hmm.
So to see that was really good. It was definitely seemed to be needing for a while.
Mm-hmm. I would say go as far to say people are desperate for that kind of community. Living here on the mountain, we've lived here for the last 5 years. You know, you're surrounded by cement. You know, you're surrounded by, and even in the condos where we live, you're surrounded by people, yet it's so easy not to know your neighbors. You
mm-hmm
know, and so for the last number of years, I've worked really hard at trying to build relationships and friendships with all the people, with as many people in the community as possible. And so for that particular event, this is the pitch-in carnival that we did this last Saturday, April the
mm-hmm
25th.
Maybe. When people listen to this, it'll be a month ago or something.
This community really is growing and developing and beginning. Even though there's been some community that's been existent for quite some time in resident housing,
mm-hmm,
it's not transitioned across the mountain to where all of us at SFU that live here feel like we have a sense of community. That's starting to change. And I think what you saw mm on Saturday was evidence of that, you know.
Yeah.
And the way I structured it is I got all the merchants in the Cornerstone building involved, well, not all of them, but most of them, I involved our scouts group, and I contacted key community leaders that I'm aware of that are already out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just invited everybody to participate and help out, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was good. It was good to see the turnout. And the weather helped.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous
it was
day.
Beautiful. Yeah. Bouncy castles helped too, you know.
Yeah.
That's the secret to community is bouncy castles.
Bouncy castles. It can be tricky here at SFU. I mean, several times I've tried different things. It is a very transient place. Mm-hmm. I mean, a university is going to be. But there is the permanent residences there. And the other part, I think, is it's a commuter school. So most people that come here come to go to their classes, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And on campus, there's not much infrastructure for actually community-oriented mm-hmm. types of activity. So I think it's quite important, especially at a university where people are supposedly learning a lot and have important things for our society, to have that. So,
you know, I think this is a question that needs to be explored more. I mean, what is the connection between urban sprawl and sustainability with the transient nature of an urban setting? Mm-hmm. I mean, people come and go, people come and go. And if you lose that sense of community with so much transience, that impacts directly sustainability of your community.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just at a university. I mean, a university is a place where you might expect that. Mm-hmm. But I think in all communities around this area, it's just something that happens now. People move around a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's all the more a case for building and developing a sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's needed.
Mm-hmm. You also are with a religious group. Are you a...
I'm a pastor.
A pastor, yeah.
Really, more accurately, I'm a ordained Baptist minister.
Okay.
Who's a chaplain here on campus at SFU, and mm-hmm. Have been since 2003. We're able to start a church on campus called The Point. I don't know if you've seen our posters or stuff on campus, but it's been primarily a student church.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last year, we merged our community worship gathering with our Sunday night student church gathering. And so now we have roughly about 70 or 80 when school's in session of students in the community attending our church mm-hmm. on any given Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And is this people of that particular faith, or is it people from a wide range
of
faiths?
This is people from all different backgrounds, people who are believers and people who aren't, people of different stripes of Christianity and people with none, you know, so we're open to everybody. Yeah, it's really a great community. I would love for you to come out and check us out sometime. I mean, that would be a worthwhile story. I should point out that I made the distinction between being a Baptist clergyman and being the pastor because about a year or two ago, I transitioned out of the pastoral involvement in the church. I handed that off to a young couple, you mm-hmm. know, and they're doing a great job. Victor and Candace Thomas, mm-hmm. and they're doing awesome. So,
okay, yeah. Great. So you're getting good turnouts. What kinds of things do you do? Do you have open discussions on topics?
For church?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, we do all sorts of stuff. One of the things that we hope to do this summer is to throw some block parties for the community. Just something similar. And incidentally, the guy that was leading the group activities, that was Victor. So the South African guy. And so he did a great, great job leading the tug of war, leading all the different games. Yeah, that was Victor. So he's the one I took to the airport this morning at 3:30 a.m., you know. So what do we do, man? Well, on a weekly basis, we have life groups, these small groups that meet all over. We have about 9 different life groups that meet both on campus and on the mountain and off the mountain.
You're saying life?
Yeah, life groups. And a life group is just a small group Bible study. It's kind of where we just share life together with people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, whatever's going on in your life, you know, it's a chance to come together with friends and just to have a little bit of time where we study the Bible, but also where we just try to help one another out, and not just us, but help our community out as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say something that really describes our church is we have a motto: love God, love others, and serve your community, and serve all. So mm-hmm. we really take that seriously, and it's been good.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think and I've explored this on previous episodes as well, is that there's also a link that I believe in, but it's open, of course, to you listeners to believe for yourself. But I think there is definitely a connection with spirit and consciousness mm-hmm. as well as sustainability. And I just want to see if What are your thoughts on that? Is that something you believe in?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this, because thanks for giving me a preset of questions to help, you know, launch my brain molecules. Okay, so I was thinking about, you know, for many, many thousands of years, different faith communities have cared about the earth. In the Christian worldview, Genesis starts out with God creating man and then saying to man, you take care of the planet. You know, so I like to think that for many, many thousands of years now, Christians have been held responsible for taking care of the planet. Now, I don't think many of them have taken that all that seriously. I think it's becoming more of an issue in this generation. But, you know, I think that it's something that we need to re-explore and really, really dive into, because if we don't take care of the planet, we're all toast, you know, so, and that starts in our own local communities. So I personally am, I like to think of myself as a green environmentalist, you know, somebody who cares about our planet, not just the trees and so forth, but the animals, as well as the people. So we care about making a difference,
I'd just like you to comment on the garbage pickup you did. I was talking with Bill about it from Nature's Garden, and it's quite a great result.
Yeah, we collected over 300 kilos of garbage in black garbage bags. But then in addition to that, we estimate that it was probably the collective total close to a ton of garbage. Because, you know, people found, like, mattresses out in the community. You know, like, people chucked their garbage just on the side of our mountain and right in our own community. And so some of our folks had gone out, especially some of our scouting people, had just scoured the community and tried to find where all this stuff was so they could bring it to the drop site for pickup that day. But they found things like transmission, you know. They found a garage door or garage hinge. It's probably about 5 meters long, metal that somebody just chucked and left up here. One of the ones, like an industrial size, that opens up condos, you know, one of those garage door tracks. It was the track that actually, you know, I mean, weird stuff like that they found all.
And are these just in the wooded areas, or where?
They were all in, particularly we had people cleaning up in the university limits. All in both the wooded areas as well as the parking lots of and so forth and so on. So. Yeah, it was a mess. It was both fun to pick up the garbage, but also sad.
Yeah.
You know, sad that there was so much junk, you know, that people had just discarded, yeah.
It really blows my mind that people still do things like that. I once was at a intersection, and I saw a lady drive up, and then at the light, she basically took all the garbage that was in her car and dumped it on the road.
Yeah.
And then drove off.
Yeah.
And to think that that's happening today.
I know.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's sad.
Yeah, little steps, I think.
Yeah.
That could also connect to a transient community as well, because if you're going to be staying in the same spot for generations like we used to, then garbage makes a big difference. Yeah.
That's true. You know, some of it may be connected to the construction work that's being done in university. You know, a lot of people coming and going with the construction community. Some people, I think a lot of it has to do with the pace of society. People are busy, so it's just faster and easier to dump your garbage off on the side of the road than to take the time to go through it and to sort it and to recycle, you know. And so that's a part of, I think, why this is happening. But ultimately, I don't think people change unless they have some kind of inner conscience that kind of helps them to decide right from wrong. And this really is a moral choice, I think. I mean, people can choose to litter and kind of, you know, be crude and nasty, or they can do something right and healthy and plan to make a positive difference in the future. That's what we advocate and want to encourage. So.
And I think that's the link, too, is that the way that maybe a moral or spiritual or religious background is a big part of sustainability, because you can make the right choice at an event one day where it's fashionable to make that choice.
Yeah, well, that's...
But, but if you're in the habit, it actually has to be a habit that you have of sustainability rather than doing sustainable things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, see, that's what we had. We had a one-day fashionable event that caught on and that people came to, and they enjoyed it. It was fun. You know, it didn't hurt that the trust donated, the Simon Fraser Community Trust donated us pretty significant prizes, and the merchants did as well. I mean, I probably gave away $1,000 in prizes, so that helped draw the crowd out. But it's good to pick up trash one day, but the spiritual compass, I think, inside every person is needed if we want to make a more lasting impact. And, and we really do. I mean, we care about this community. I mean, we want to see this community grow and strengthen. And really, we want to see neighbors caring for each other. And we want to see them caring for their environment. But that won't happen if there's no spiritual compass that kind of directs us towards good causes and righteous things. You know, that's my opinion.
Okay.
So, oh, sorry.
Oh, is that a phone?
It's my cell phone. Son, you want to...
That's funny.
You take care of that.
Ring, ring.
Yeah.
I might not edit that out.
Yeah, that's... And my son, that was his ringtone that he created.
Maybe could you do that for us right now? The ring, 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 ring.
Make it... Make the sound, son. You know, something I haven't spent much time exploring, but that's the... One of the things that I do as a chaplain is work with a number of other chaplains in what we call at SFU the Interfaith Center. And Interfaith Center is a group of different people representing different faith groups. So we have Muslims and we have different Christians like Catholics and so forth. You can go on the SFU website and find the, all the different participants in the interfaith community. You know, this is one of those things that we land pretty much on the same page. You know, most everybody in the Interfaith Center...
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. You can turn it off now. Good. It's just, you know, a lot of times you have to find the common ground to work with people. Even though Christians, I would say, for the most part, have most in common theologically, even though there's variations of different differences in Christianity, different shades, for the most part, most Christians share common faith and common theology. Most of us are going to believe in Christmas and Easter, and most of us are going to, you know, celebrate different worship. You know, we believe in worshiping God, right? So the slight differences kind of give us our identity, but it's things like sustainability and environment that I think can land us on the same page, you know, bridge some of the differences. They're not too many, mind you, so...
I imagine you get quite a wide variety of religious backgrounds up here as well.
Yeah. We do, yeah. It's fun. You should come out and check us out sometime. It's a trip.
I might. So I wanted to talk a bit more about scouting, because I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I mean, it is a very widely recognized institution, if you might want to call it an institution, I don't know. But are you aware of any sort of movement towards sustainability with Scouts Canada? I don't know. I haven't prepped you with this, but maybe.
Sure. Yeah, Scouts Canada does have a program that deals with climate change.
Yeah.
And you know, that's pretty well accepted and appreciated across Canada. And so our particular group has been studying that on occasion, you know. And so the tools that they provide through scouting, and some of this and many others, are good stuff. You know, I've just won awards for programming of some type or another. But so Scouts Canada is... plans for this kind of dialogue with kids, you know.
Very good. You are listening to an interview with Kelly Minear, local SFU minister and scout group leader, on Sustainable Futures, CJSF 90.1 FM. Would you be able just to talk about the different groups? I think a lot of listeners have been through Scouts themselves. But,
sure, yeah.
What are some of the different groups? What are some of the mottos?
Sure, okay. So we have Beavers. That's for our 5 to 7-year-olds. Beavers' motto is sharing, sharing, sharing. Beavers are good sharers. You know, we encourage that. And incidentally, I mean, doesn't that go against our human nature at times? I mean, you've seen it. You know, the kid who says, mine, mine, mine.
Yeah.
Yet we really try to encourage them to think about others, you know, and sharing and sharing and just sharing. So that's a good motto. The Cubs, their motto is do your best. And that's always a good one to encourage the kids. You know, so like, for example, we had our pitch-in carnival, mm-hmm. and we wanted the kids to show up. And not just to show up, but to look their best, to wear their uniforms, and to do their best, to make a difference in our community, you know.
Right.
So do your best. We actually have a chant in scouting that goes with that. It's quite a fun chant. You have to come out. I'm not going to demonstrate it on the air, but you'll have to come out on a Friday night. We meet every Friday night during the regular school year in education room 7600. But anyways, our Cubs do a chant, and one of the things that they say in the chant is, dib, 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 dob, dob, dob. And that means dib, 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 do your best, and then dob is do our best, you know. And so that's kind of a weekly part of our routine, and just encouraging the kids to do that. Were you a scout?
Oh, yeah, I was.
So you might remember some of that. Okay. And then the scouts is you're familiar with be prepared, you know.
Yeah.
So the older the kids get, the more we focus on preparation.
Got to practice that every single day.
And of course, being prepared for everything, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, our programs typically deal with outdoor activities, but mm-hmm. This is a motto that we hope is incorporated into every part of their life. You know, mm-hmm. be prepared for your work when one day you'll work. Be prepared for your education. Yeah. Be prepared for your community. Be prepared for your spouse, you know, as time goes on. I mean, be prepared for life.
Yeah.
And so it's good.
Big one right now is be prepared for economic change.
I think you and I are going to experience that in the next 10 to 20 years. That's a whole other discussion, but I would love to talk with you more about that. I mean, I'm not a prophet, but I see significant changes coming. Mm-hmm. Economically, this is going to drive all sorts of things. So we could talk about China and India and the rise of those economies and how that's going to impact the world. We could talk about petroleum products and so forth and how that's going to impact the world continually. But I think how I'm most interested in this is how it's going to impact the local community.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to look like for us, you know, here at SFU? I hope as time goes on, we'll see more and more community-driven initiatives that cause people to really think about what they're doing.
Now, I think clearly you're very involved in community. One thing I think about is the concept of wealth, and wealth can be, a lot of people will, financial wealth, but then there's also community wealth, and what is more valuable? When people ask me why am I not at CBC, or why am I not trying to make a financial career right now? And I just think about, from my point of view, the people I'm meeting now, it's much easier to do this way. The community that I'm building is actually bringing me wealth that's going to be far more valuable.
That's a good way to look at it, Ty. We talked about this at church just recently. We were talking about wealth from the book of James in the mm-hmm. Bible. James is pretty harsh on the wealthy. He doesn't condemn mm-hmm. those who are wealthy. He condemns the improper spending and the way that people, you know, use their money selfishly, you know. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talked about was how wealthy we are here in North America compared to the rest of the world. And we watched a video clip that showed something like, if you have a house to live in, if you have a car that you can drive, and if you have food on your table, you're 25% of the world's population. 75% lives in utter abject poverty. Of those, 50% of those live on less than $1 a day. You know, so I think the other...
Which is mind-boggling. Yeah. That's
So when we think about our particular community, you know, students who we're always complaining. I was just recently finished my doctorate, and so I've always been complaining about how poor I am and how poor I feel. But, you know, I have to really put that in perspective, because we really are truly wealthy in our community, and we have some people of significant means that live here.
Mm-hmm.
My hope for them, and maybe if any of them are listening to this program, this would be a challenge, that they would do something with their wealth. They wouldn't hoard their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
They would care about more about what they can do to make a difference in the world than mm-hmm. about preparing for their retirement. They wouldn't, you know, plan and daydream about, you know, catching you know, fishing and picking up shells on the seashore. Instead, they would do something to make a difference. You know, they would mm-hmm. they would recognize that people in sub-Sahara Africa need clean water. You know, they would recognize mm-hmm. that people are dying of AIDS, and they would recognize that, you know, certain species are becoming extinct, and they would do something about it. You know, I mean, we have the wealth and the means. Even if our wealth in the Western world is diminishing, we still have the means to do something about it. And so, I want to encourage a community that thinks passionately about getting involved and making a difference in this world. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what I think Jesus did. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. he was passionate, and he made a difference, and he loved people. He served his community, and he gave everything, mm-hmm. you know, for them.
It's easy to try and plan to hoard, and, like, I think everyone will go through that from time to time.
Yeah, we all do. I mean, I'm not judging our wealthy people here on the mountain, because I only have to look at myself to see. Yeah. You know, I mean, I spent $50 at the Sears Outlet Mall yesterday on dress shoes, because I needed dress shoes.
Yeah.
But I still spent $50, you know? I mean, $50 isn't a lot for shoes these days, but it's... Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money, and so we have to be careful.
I think a good question to pose is, what are you saving for? What are you going to retire into if you don't use this capital towards good ends now? Because it really is at that point where mm-hmm. if someone's saving for their retirement, and that's all our society is doing, well, they're not going to retire into a very good place. They're going to wish that they... we're more actively involved in the community today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I mean, having worked with students now for 20 years, you know, mm-hmm. we've watched a significant change in the last few years taking place. Students used to just go out and get a job during the summer months. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was just standard. Right now, students are really struggling to find work. I mean, they can't find paying jobs.
I know
a
lot of people that are having troubles.
Yeah, I'm talking to a friend of mine last night, a kid who, a student here on the mountain, and, you know, he's like, man, I think I'm going to apply for the Starbucks there, maybe the Shoppers, or maybe the Safeway. There's the golf course right across the street. I should really put my application in at all these places. I mean, he hasn't got anything lined up. I feel for him. I mean, he needs the money to pay for school. Yet it's no easy task these days in this culture and climate finding valuable mm-hmm. work, you know.
I'm running into people all the time now that have been laid off, or been hearing about people that have been laid off from all different kinds of sectors. So it's mm-hmm. a bit, it's really hitting now.
Yeah. We're not economists, so we probably can't comment super intelligently on this, but we are a university community. And if mm-hmm. we should lead the way in anything, it's having intelligent dialogue, you know, about these mm-hmm. kinds of issues. And, you know, as a minister, I mean, one of the things that I get the joy of is walking with people through their different stages in life, you know, births and deaths and marriages and all sorts of things. You know,
I envy that. Sounds great.
It is. It really, I love my job. But, I mean, you know, one of the things that we're seeing more and more is just the financial stress. I'm hearing more and more churches that are putting on seminars in helping their constituents deal with debt, you know, mm-hmm. and things like that. And so we didn't hear about these things 20 years ago. But I can anticipate that we'll hear about them more in the years to come. You know, I don't see, and again, I'm not a prophet, but I don't anticipate that things are going to just super rally. You know, like everybody's always talking about the markets are going to get better. You know, now's the time, invest. When you add up all the details, I wonder, is there room for that much optimism? I'm not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a big change, I think. Like, there's the whole scope of how we look at the world. Mm-hmm. is probably going to change.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to redefine things. I really don't think it's possible to kill a society, because societies reinvent themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in a phase where we're going to reinvent ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and incidentally, speaking of reinventing, I'm a practitioner, so I'm on the ground working with, mm-hmm. with students and with university communities, not just here at SFU, but my new role is more expanded across the province. So I'm really into our university communities at UBC, SFU, UVic, other places. What I'm seeing is, and what I'm counseling students these days, is, look, if you want to go out and get a job, really, you should think, and this might get me in trouble on your radio station, but I think you should consider something like a BCIT degree, something that you can go out and get a job immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're beginning to see. We're beginning to see more and more students tackle the 1 or 2 year program at a tech school, you know, that will help them land a significant
trades.
Job. Yeah, yeah, especially in the trades. And then sometimes they're coming back to the university. Now, my friends are academics, you know, and I am too. You know, I care about academia. But I'm not seeing a lot of the movement coming from the young people straight into universities like we have in the past. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're going to tech schools and colleges and different places. And then maybe they'll come back for like a second degree and kind of a pick-me-up later on. I think SFU is wise to plan strategies to reach the 25 and 30-somethings, you know, who have, mm-hmm. who have started careers. This is happening, I think, because of necessity, because the young people can't just come to university and finish and expect that they're going to have great jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it used to be a little bit easier than it is now.
Yeah. And, it's become a big industry, education. Mm-hmm. I think, now, I don't know for sure, but, you know, in the past, I think it would be a lot easier, actually, to come right out of high school and get a job, because now the jobs that you used to go out of high school and get, you have to get a degree first. And I think the reason you have to get a degree first is because it's profitable to create a school that mm-hmm. gives you the training for the degree that you would have previously learned on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to pay them
mm-hmm.
first. And then you're in debt. So mm-hmm. once you're in debt, then you're going to stay.
And we really have created a cycle of poverty.
Yeah.
And I've read recently that many compare this student generation, you know, those that were born in like 1989, like the 20-year-olds and younger, this generation, they're comparing it to people, the generation of the Great Depression, you know, in terms of, and they're wondering, why are so many of these young people moving back in with their parents? Well, it's because they can't find jobs, you know, jobs aren't as plentiful. And even if they do get a job, it's flipping burgers at McDonald's, and
yeah. You
can't live on that. So
there's some really, really bright people behind mm-hmm. those counters right now.
That's true. At the same time, you know, yeah. I mean, something that I applaud is people who, in this generation, that are choosing the less paying jobs because they value things like community more.
A lot of people,
you know,
are.
And that's
definitely.
Really cool. You know, I mean, that's, yeah. to me, that's, I know so many people that are like, well, I'm not yet going to make a career choice because mm-hmm. My plan is to save up as much money as I can and travel for a few years, you know, and then come back and then begin to set up house and so forth and so on. But, you know, I mean, there's one couple in particular, friends of ours, one of the guys I played Risk with last night till 1 a.m. this guy's a bright guy, graduate of SFU Criminology. He and his wife, who will graduate this fall, are saving their pennies to go to India because they want to serve India, poverty, and they want to help reach out to families in India. Isn't that cool?
It is.
And they
cool.
they want the privilege to live in a different culture as well and kind of experience things that they've not experienced, you know? So, I mean, mm-hmm. I really, that's the kind of things that maybe the more adventurous side to this particular generation that I really appreciate and mm-hmm. I dig, you know, and that's why I love students.
And this is what I see changing too, is more people are caring about the value, interpersonal value, or the intrinsic value of what they're doing, rather than the money that's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a sort of a little change happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is just the opinion of a radio broadcaster, but you never know.
Some people have put it like this. They've said that this generation works to live, and perhaps previous generations lived to work. You know, there's a really big difference there.
There is, you know, yeah. So. That's really good. Well, is there anything else you would like to talk about here today?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was a very interesting conversation, mm-hmm. and we covered quite a lot, and I think it's going to be really great to get the local perspective.
Give me back the ocean while there's fish in the sea. Give me back the land while there's still a single tree. Give me clean air while I can still breathe. Lamps that light the street, save the ozone or feel the heat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody say yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds simple, but no, 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 it's not. If people in power want to pick every flower, gotta save our planet. It's the only one we got. Give me back the mountains and the valleys in between. To swim in rivers that are nice and clean. I want a car that runs on trash, not gasoline. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody say yeah, yeah, yeah.
not. If people in power want to pick every flower, gotta save our planet, it's the only one we got. Give me back the sky before you block the view. Give me back the forest and the wetlands too. People in power need to get a clue. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody say yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds simple, but no, 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 it's not. If people in power want to pick every flower, gotta save our planet, it's the only one we got. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds simple, but no, 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 it's not.
Now for a reading of a poem, The Ear of Mother Earth by Turok Maltese, from a SPEC event for Earth Day, which was just over a month ago now. I'd like to thank the CGSF Spoken Word Department for getting this audio for me. So here it is. And the song you just listened to was by Terry Hendricks.
So I thought instead of giving you a speech on Mother Earth Day, with your permission, I will read a prose poem whose title is The Ear of Mother Earth. It's a slightly long poem. It's a little over 10 minutes long, so I hope you will bear with me. And since we have saved a little bit of time earlier, I hope I can take that indulgence. The poem is called The Ear of Mother Earth. It was a sad and frightening ear, the ear of the bees. In the beginning was the bee. The bees left their house one morning, fluttered their wings briefly as if to say goodbye, and then, just like that, they were gone, forever, every single one of them. And in search of them followed the flowers and the fruit and the butterflies, never to return. And with them went all the colors of the rainbow, and then in unutterable grief the grand glaciers melted into oceans of salt tears. And in the fog of their tears vanished the polar bears and the penguins and the pelicans and then the islands. And then were lost the changing of the seasons, and later the seas emptied of fish and the rivers ran dry one after the other and the savannas burnt into cracked earth and the great cats were no more. In mourning there is honor, and it was the ear of the bees, but soon it became the ear of Mother Earth. In truth, it was the ear of the humans. And so it came to pass, as the red dim twilight of a silent spring afternoon spread across the tall glass tower on Earth Day, in the ear of Mother Earth, that the people of Earth found, after all the whys and the wherefores, a sliver not quite of hope, but perhaps of the possibility of hope. A deep underground cavern that would save only a few lives, a few people. And these would be little children from all nations, the pure of the heart. And with them only the interpreters of the malady, the thinkers and the activists and the politicians who had looked with unblinking eye into the abyss of human folly. And the interpreters, they spoke in different tongues, but they all spoke of the same malady, the malady of the broken connection. The interpreters were to be the keepers of the memories. For hope thrives only in the ephemeral soil of memory. Without memory, hope is but the short name of anxiety. And every night of dreams carries in its womb the nightmare of the day after tomorrow. Thus they taught the people of the world to keep hope alive through the innocence of the children and the memories of age. But thus it was not to be, for in the cave the children slept a deep and beautiful slumber filled with dreams from their fathers and their mothers and the keepers of memories, all talking of the continuity of life, of the broken connection. A sleep that ended only when the elders were gone, and gone with them all the memories of the human race. And thus, despite all the whys and the wherefores, all memories were lost. All memory was lost, save the dreams. all memory was lost. The memory of the glory and the catastrophe, the magic of the alphabet, the beauty of words, the mystery of science, the poetry of numbers, and the algebra of poetry. All memory was lost, save the dreams. For now began the age of dreams, when the dreamers held up the sky. Dreams like a symphony with many notes, and if a note was lost, new dreamers to remember and to retie the ligament and to restore. Dreams like a symphony with many notes. Dreams like a symphony with many notes. Our broken connection with nature, our broken connection with the psyche, our broken connection with our ancestors, our broken connection with the community, the broken connection between people of different colors and races and opinions and values and hopes, the broken connection between knowledges, like the body of Osiris buried in 1,000 different disciplines. Dreams with many notes melded into a single symphony that life cannot exist without the web of connections. But in time, each family of children in their villages, to which they gave wondrous names conjured from the long-lost memories of a land long lost, America and Africa and India and China and Greece and the Levant, the children in their villages sought to perfect the note that they loved the most. The children of America struck the note of the oneness with nature. They saw in each person the spirit of the soaring eagle and the soft cloud and the fearless wolf and the gentle lamb. And in the Levant, they exalted the oneness of knowledge, though with a complicated name, monotheism. They warned of the impatience that devalued the future and encouraged patience, which some had called a low discount rate. And banned interest. They made history their pole star and teleology the validation of truth. And for the children of Greece, the path to continuity ran through the polity, the city-state, and the public square, which incarnated equity between people and people, without which there was neither security nor sustainability. And in China, the resonant note was the community. The image of the family with its sisters and brothers and parents and grandparents and nieces and second cousins and grandchildren, of every person connected to every other person, just as the heaven was to the earth and the palace was to the hovel. And the Indians found the note on the connection with the psyche. They warned of the violence that comes from fear and greed, from the perennial search for limits and boundaries to surpass, and of the futility of searching for the roots of violence outside the psyche. They turned inwards into the soul for redemption and meaning. They preached nonviolence against nature and humans, and they learned to eat and thrive without violence. And the children of Africa perfected the note of the oneness of the mind and the body, the wisdom incarnated in the ancestors and in persons and in the body and in movement and in feeling and expression. And thus they perfected their notes. And so with time, though the notes sang purely, harmony was lost. Connections were broken, and no one there to mend them. The dreamers hid behind one another, behind veils and interstices and fringes, fearing ridicule and persecution. They were told to awaken, to make themselves useful, to become consultants or diplomats or bureaucrats or something, or at least to entertain through stories and poetry and song. And so the dreams turned stale, and in their staleness they turned upon themselves, upon each other. For when the dreamers lose their dreams, the awakened find their nightmares. Nightmares of silent springs and nuclear winters and final solutions. Nightmares of the non-violent learning violence, of the dissolution of communities, of equity becoming the handmaiden of inequity, of knowledge splintering into 1,000 faces, and of the rising fury of nature. But then, slowly and gradually, the world began to find the dreamers again, and the dreamers to find each other. And there was talk once again of unity, of solidarity, of hope, of the broken connection, of the burden of memories and the memories of burdens, of the interpretations of the malady and the melody of interpretations. And so it came to pass, on a quiet but not yet silent spring afternoon, of an ominous and not yet frightening year, that in a gathering of dreamers, in the basement of a glass tower, in a fabled city by the ocean, there came an interpreter, not of maladies, but of dreams, a bearded man from the high mountains, who spoke of the present in a parable of the future. And the parable foretold that the circle had closed. The future had flown inexorably into the past. Every dream had flown into the other. The awakened had been lulled to sleep by their nightmares, and the dreamers had awakened, for the hour of their ministry had come. Thank you.
And now for the last segment of the show today. It's a short interview about a toast for world peace. For all of you who love to toast things, this is the event for you. And all of you who love world peace, this is the event for you. And all of you who love to toast for world peace, this is your event, and it's this Monday. So I had an interview with Jeff Boggensberger about his toast for world peace. This is Ryan Fletcher of Sustainable Futures, and I'm speaking with Jeff Boggensberger. We're going to be talking about a toast to a better world. Sounds very exciting. What is a toast to a better world?
It's actually a toast for peace. That's the website. It would be atoastforpeace.com. Although the whole premise is, it really is a toast for a better world. I think I just came up with the name because it was pretty easy to say, and it lended itself well to a website. So the actual official name is A Toast for Peace.
Okay.
What it is, it's an idea that I conceived while watching the U.S. presidential election. Kind of got a unique view on separate parts of the world. Being mm-hmm. Canadian, I have obviously those interests. And then also just seeing here with Australians reacted, and as well with the East Asian cultures and how they were reacting. And what I noticed was on all corners of the earth, it seemed that people were just kind of itching for this idea of change, and what Obama kind of represented as the potential for change. From my standpoint, I don't think change can happen just from one man. I think it needs to come from everybody. So the idea was to create this A Toast for Peace, to see if I couldn't get a number of people, and so far it's been quite successful, to just do one simple act that states that we're all unified with this idea that the world can be better, and we start adhering to just better principles with regards to how we interact with each other.
Okay. So you're talking really on the level of day-to-day interactions?
Yeah, very much so on the day-to-day interactions. And when you get together, when everybody's positive and everybody's enjoying themselves, you know, harnessing that energy, it can definitely be transferable to, you know, a larger scale. And that energy exists in every single country in the world.
But how does this Toast for Peace work?
There's a sign up at the website. Right now, I think we're getting close to about 8,000 on the website that have signed up. Uh-huh. There's a Facebook site, like a Facebook group, just I think it's called A Toast for Peace that somebody created. I'm not sure how many people are on there. You know, I have visions of people all over the world doing that kind of stereotypical Oktoberfest in Munich type mugs of beer clashing together and everyone singing and being happy together for that period of time. And so whether you're drinking beer or you're having sake or soju or, you know, it doesn't matter, whatever country you're in, it should be a very simple action with hopefully a very powerful meaning. I think people feel their hands are tied because they can't do the big thing. Well, this isn't like that. This is just go out on next Monday after work with your work colleagues, or meet up with your friends and family, or go home with your spouse and your children, and whoever you're with, just take 5 minutes and say, you know what, this guy living in Melbourne, he decided that we should all have a toast for peace, so let's all join him.
This has been an interview with Jeff Boggensberger of A Toast for Peace here on Sustainable Futures on CGSF 90.1 FM. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sustainable Futures. If you'd like to listen to this episode or any other episode of Sustainable Futures, the previous episodes are put up on the website radioforall.net. It's currently completely up to date, except for this episode. And that is www.radioforall.net. This is episode number 32. It's always a pleasure bringing you ideas of sustainable futures. Until next week, I am Ryan Fletcher, and I am wishing you a sustainable future.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.